Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Coming up on this episode of White Wine Question Time.
The rhythm method, that was one of the
it sounds like contraception, by the way, for the church.
I think it was meant to be vaguely rude as a title, but I don't know. Red bow tie, could be leather if you so required, and then as a man you would wear quite heavy makeup in the 80s.
A bit of guy liner,
quite, you know.
I would imagine you rocked the guy liner.
Oh my god, yeah. Well, it was the 80s. I'll just preface it by saying that.
Go on.
A jet of flame right over the pair of us. But I was wearing extremely flammable clothes. I was wearing some very nylon clothes, which then melted. My trousers melted.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest today is a comedian, actor, director, and best-selling children's author who first found fame as one half of the comedy duo Armstrong and Miller, alongside his longtime friend and fellow Cambridge graduate, Alexander Armstrong. He's since had huge success as an actor with roles in Bridgerton on Channel 4's crime drama Suspect, a starring role as the lead in the first two seasons of the BBC's Death in Paradise. Then there's the movies, Paddington 2 and Johnny English. And now he's back on air with the third season of Professor T on ITVX. However, he also has a much younger fan base away from grown-up drama, predominantly amongst children aged 6 and above, having just released his 10th children's book, and he's now one of the UK's best-selling children's authors. Raised on a suburban housing estate in Nantwich, Cheshire, alongside his brother and sister, his parents were both teachers, and he did really well at his local school, going on to win a place at Cambridge to study natural sciences and then a PhD in quantum physics, which is where he also went on to become president of the famous Cambridge Footlights, with a nice side hustle as the college's resident DJ running the campus mobile disco. But it was a meeting with fellow student Alexander Armstrong that ignited his love of comedy, and he quickly ditched his PhD to tour the pubs and clubs of the comedy circuit for 4 years alongside Xander. They performed their first double act show together at the Edinburgh Fringe in 1996, which earned them a Perrier nomination and also led to their first television series, The Armstrong and Miller Show. Since then, he's become a father to three and has spent almost three decades working flat out as an actor and director, showing his immeasurable range from comedies to drama, and now lives in Gloucestershire with his children and his second wife, Jessica Parker. So let's dial him in. It's Ben Miller. Ben Miller, welcome to the show. I must explain, it's been quite the trauma for you today, hasn't it?
So much going on. Yeah, kind of one of those days when, you know that expression, your eyes are too big for your belly? Well, that, but in diary terms.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good to be here.
I saw you this morning on Lorraine's sofa.
Yeah, I was bothering Lorraine again. And she very, very sweetly... Very, very sweetly showed a clip from the show I'm in, Professor T, which starts this week. And she also rather brilliantly showed my book, Diary of a Big Bad Wolf. I think it's quite strange to sit on someone's sofa talking about a really quite intense psychological drama. And then... and now a story about... So that's what other people write that I'm in. This is what I write, which is essentially a tarted up nursery rhyme. But there
you go. That you're doing yourself a huge disservice there, let me tell you. I mean, it sort of encapsulates brilliantly your huge range and ability to do stuff and your curiosity to do stuff, because it's more than a portfolio career that you've got rocking along there.
I do love a fairy tale. That's the truth. I love, I'm obsessed with like my childhood, my kids' childhoods, the whole idea of, I used to love that museum in Bethnal Green. I don't know if it's still going, the Museum of Childhood, which is brilliant, where you can find all the toys that you played with when you were a kid. I think that's all it is really, because let's face it, no matter whether it's a psychological drama or not, it's still basically sort of dressing up and pretending to be someone, isn't it? And, you know...
Which, considering you're a qualified scientist, is quite interesting.
Yeah. It's not... I'd never took science that seriously. I was never the kind of scientist who I thought I would be a professional scientist. I just kind of quite liked... I quite liked stars and planets and rockets and things like that. I thought that was quite fun. I slightly missold physics, I think. Somewhere it all makes sense.
Congratulations. I can't work out, is this your 11th or 10th book?
It's my 10th book.
It's
my 10th children's book, yeah. I wrote a couple of science books, funny enough, we were just talking about science. A couple of science books first. To sort of warm up a bit, really, I wanted to get into writing, and I thought, well, I'll write about, you know, they say write about what you know, and all I knew about was science. So I wrote a couple of science books, and then got into writing children's stories, which is brilliant. I don't think there's a better job, actually. Certainly better than, I think it's probably better than probably writing grown-up fiction. Is that what you call it? Grown-up fiction?
Adult fiction.
Adult fiction sounds wrong, doesn't it? I can't go
into it. Yeah, it does a bit, yeah. Sounds like it should come with some sort of like age limit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Advisory warning.
Yeah.
Don't write
Parental
that.
Advisory. Adult
don't
fiction.
Don't write that.
No.
I think you're right. It's a world in which to escape. You create your own Narnia, and you have done that time and time again. And I just wondered how you managed to... make bedfellows of that alongside shooting something like Professor T, which is, as you say, like quite an intense experience.
I think, Professor T is sort of a really interesting one for me because it is so close to my own life. I mean, I don't solve crimes wearing a pair of rubber gloves in Cambridge, but I did... I did want to be an academic, and I studied physics at Cambridge, and I those buildings that we film in, because the show's set in Cambridge, if anybody's listening and doesn't know what I'm talking about, it's basically a detective show where the detective is a professor of criminology called Professor T, and he helps the local police solve these sort of particularly baffling crimes, which for some reason only seem to happen in Cambridge. And and he has this strange sort of backstory, so he's quite a tragic figure in some ways. He's got this very traumatic childhood. He witnessed his own... Well, I don't think he witnessed his own father's suicide, but he found his father not long after his father's death in mysterious circumstances. And one of the riddles of the show is exactly what were those circumstances, what was his involvement. And so really it's two mysteries bundled together. It's the story of the week, and then it's the bigger overarching story of, like, what was this thing that happened in his childhood that made him obsessive compulsive germophobic, you know,
of which you also share traits, don't you?
Which I do share traits of, yeah. So I, not only was I, was I hoping to be an academic, but I also have OCD and have had various, you know, to various degrees throughout my life, and I've had cognitive behavioural therapy.
CBT,
CBT, thank you, yeah. So I've got... So I have OCD myself, not the same kind. It doesn't manifest in the same way as it does with the professor, but it is very emotional to me playing that part. So I feel like I'm kind of getting therapy. I'm getting therapy being in that show because I get so emotional in the scenes. Like some of the ways, some of it, the modern word would be triggering. I would hate to use that.
Yeah.
That expression myself, but
You relate.
But I relate.
Yeah, is that slightly less nauseous for you?
Which is a very long roundabout answer to your question. But what it's saying is basically I totally live in my imagination. Sometimes that imagination gets a little overwrought, and things like OCD creep in, and I get all my therapy from being in Professor T.
But we recently, I was talking to Richard Armitage on a forthcoming episode of the show, and he too was away shooting a really intense psychological thriller, but at the same time trying to write his first audio book. So just had two worlds running in tandem in his mind, and really quite enjoyed
it. Is it called Geneva, his book?
I've seen that. Yeah. Yes.
I was reading a bit of that in the bookshop. It looks very good,
doesn't it?
Yeah, and I loved the setup of it. I really love thriller and sort of spy type stories. It didn't seem like it was necessarily, it was kind of hinting that it might be a sort of bit of an espionage type.
And how's about this for a sort of strange turn of events in terms of a route to becoming an author? He was asked to do that. Initially, Audible approached him and said, would you be up for doing an audiobook? Because you're one of our most downloaded narrators. You're really popular in this space with this demographic. Yeah. And they wanted to kind of buddy him up with a ghostwriter. And he's like, I'll do it, but only if you let me do it myself and write it. And that's how it came to be.
And his writing is really...
very good.
Beautiful. There's a great description of the mountains being like origami or something at the beginning of the book. So I thought, that's really good.
There you go.
Inspiring, isn't it? Inspiring when people do things and they kind of break out of the box that I guess we've put them in. They probably haven't put themselves in that box, but and show that they can do something completely, you know, it's not completely different, is it? But, you know...
But it kind of is, though.
Something
I mean,
you never expect them to be able to do. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's brilliant.
As demonstrated by your good self, Ben.
Well, I guess that's why I'm all in favour. I mean, I think, you know, I think... God, we haven't got, you know, forever, have we? And we've got to kind of try and do the things that you really
got to squeeze the lemon.
To do. You've got to squeeze that lemon, Kate. You've got to squeeze that lemon.
Speaking of which, we haven't got much time, I know, because you are a busy man. So I have devised what I hope, Ben, are three questions that enable us to get to know you and the many boxes that live in your head a little better. So question number one for you. Your children's books are hugely inspired by your own childhood in Nantwich, which saw you raised on people hear that you went to Cambridge. You were actually raised on a kind of a 60s, 70s housing estate in Nantwich. I lived on one much the same. Yeah. Like you, I used to play out after school with all the kids on the estate.
Oh, it was amazing. It was brilliant.
All that stuff. Yeah. So talk to me about what facets of your childhood and your youth have found their way to your pages.
So much. So I was a big gang of kids on the street where I lived. We all used to play out, and they draw maps, don't they? And they date them by decade of the distance that kids were allowed to run. We were basically could go anywhere. There was no circle that could contain us, really. I mean, I would get on my bike and go cycling for miles. I mean, I think the furthest would be to sort of, it was quite disappointing when I got there, Sandbach. It was about like 10 miles away. 10 miles on my bike. I would cycle all day. No helmet. No nothing. On the main roads. Off you'd go in the morning, cycling. Get off your bike at sort of whatever time it was, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, look around, go, well, now Sandbach is a bit disappointing, isn't it? Get back on the bike, cycle all the way back. Nobody would like bat an eyelid. Oh, yeah, just in time for tea. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, as long as you were back for tea.
Where have you been? What have you done?
Yeah.
As long as you were back for tea, you were fine. If you were a bit late for tea, that was...
Good luck.
That was a problem. That was a problem. Good luck.
And then if you didn't make it back, everybody on the estate would just come out of their houses and there would be this, like, mass search party. And then you knew
huge
you were in trouble
because you'd
you could hear this choir rumbling over the horizon, couldn't you, of, like, people just foghorning your name.
Yes. They had a search for Chris Amos. Yeah, he went missing. He was out playing down by the stream and, yeah, we all went out searching for him. Yeah, it was amazing. So we were playing lots and lots of games out in the street. And then we were living on the edge of Nantwich. So there were fields, you know, beyond the housing estate. And we would go out and play in those fields and, make dens and just generally sort of lark about. I'm still a bit of a cow whisperer. The other day I was walking, with some friends.
That's not on your CV.
It's not my CV. I was out walking with some friends. We were crossing, you know, as a kind of, you know, we were like, you call it hiking, don't they? But, you know, basically we walked about half a mile and we were crossing this field and suddenly all these cows came around. Everyone started panicking and I was like, a bit like Crocodile Dundee. And I was like, guys, I've got this. I know cows. And literally... Literally, I knew what they were. They were bullocks. I could tell they were bullocks. And I know that's exactly what we had in the field behind, you know, in the field behind the estate I grew up on. So I was kind of like, so I was doing that whole cow whisperer thing of calming the cow. The cow is curious. The cow is also afraid. The cow experiences this push and pull of fear and curiosity. And you just need to calm the cow. And it was a real achievement, actually. I got eventually, there's kind of like 30 cows sort of surrounding me, while everyone else sort of skips across the field in the background. I don't quite know how I got into that. But, yeah, so I suppose what I was trying to say was it was just kind of a mix of, market town and, you know, really rural. Like some of the kids at my school lived in really, really rural places, and I think that's great for your imagination because there's literally nothing to do. I mean, there were only
isn't that important though, Ben?
I think that was important.
I think being bored is just creates the fertile mind.
I think so. I was bored a lot and I think it did me the power of good. How often do we allow ourselves to be bored? No, it's not often, is it?
I think a lot of my childhood boredom was kind of
good
cooked up into ambition, actually.
Yeah. Well, there is nothing like having your nose pressed up against the glass of a market town like Nantwich to fuel ambition, I have to say. It's like show business and the world of entertainment felt like that was a long way down the other end of a backwards telescope.
Yeah, but it was just out of reach, right?
Yeah, out of reach.
And then it I suppose it became within your reach by the time you made it to Cambridge and Footlights. But what about those intervening years? What about the youth of your teens and how that informed the books that you write and the adventures that you set your characters on?
Well, I was very lucky. I had a really good, great group of friends at school. And we basically just used to make each other laugh. We used to... you know, Monty Python was very big. The Goodies were very big. The Young Ones were very big. And we used to kind of just act out those sketches sort of in the schoolyard and after school. And I think that was very formative. You know, that kind of really cemented my love of comedy. And that was really my route. Once I got to university and I realised, you know, that maybe... maybe a career in physics wasn't beckoning. Then it kind of gave me something else, and then sort of stumbling across the Footlights, which I don't think I'd actually even really heard of before I was at Cambridge. And the Footlights is this sort of university society for writing and performing sketch comedy. And many of my favourite comedians, unbeknownst to me, had been in Footlights. So I'd be in the club room at this Footlights club at Cambridge, and there'd be files there of reviews of shows, and you could like go back to the 1960s and there'd be reviews of shows that, say, John Cleese and, you know, Graham Chapman from Monty Python had both been in, and the reviews were really bad. It was like they I think one of them I read said something like, most of the worst material was written by John Cleese and Graham Chapman. It sort of gave you courage, really, because you kind of thought, well, if they were ordinary when they were this age, then maybe ordinary me might have some kind of, you know, if I work, I might have some sort of future in comedy. I mean, yeah.
It turns out you very much did.
I did. I was because very lucky because I met Alexander Armstrong. That was the key to it, really. He was a little bit younger than me, although because I was doing a PhD, we were sort of there at the same time, if you know what I mean. He was an undergraduate at the same time as I was doing my PhD. So I kind of got to know him a bit shortly after we both finished, and then we quickly sort of fell in together writing, because he wanted to get into sketch comedy as well. As we then quickly sort of fell in together writing together, and that was kind of when I feel like I sort of hit my stride, really.
It was like when PJ met Duncan, wasn't it?
I mean look at them now.
Exactly.
Look at them now. But exactly. It is a bit like, I mean, they've thick and thinned it, haven't they, those two? I mean, that's really impressive. But
so have you two, though. You're still firm friends. And look, you're both disgustingly successful.
Disgustingly successful. Well, he is anyway. And I kind of...
you are too.
I've had some wonderful moments, I have to say. What's the expression? I mustn't grumble. I mean, it's been amazing, really. And what has really amazed me is I've been able to, rather like I did in physics, which was just sort of pursue my interest, really, and hope that something would happen. I've kind of done the same with varying degrees of commercial success, I have to say. Some things work, some things don't. But if you just sort of carry on with the things that at least excite you, I think hopefully then there's some kind of thread to hang a career run. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's the only thing I can boil it down to is it has to fire you up on some level. You have to kind of think, oh yes, that would be fun. I would like to do that. You know, I feel an excitement when I think about that idea or project or that person that I might work with. Or
it's like Madonna said, you know what? The most outrageous thing she ever did was stick around.
That's clever. She's amazing. I mean, she is amazing. Anybody who thinks to title their like 10th album music.
Right.
That was the point at which I thought, well, Yeah, go on, no, then. That really is good. That really is good. You really are seeing a bigger picture when you call your album Music.
Music.
Oh, that's great. That's really fantastic, isn't it?
Talking of music, that takes me very nicely to my next question for you. Question number two. For a while, you ran a mobile DJ. You were the Rhythm Method, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
Like a mobile DJ service at Cambridge.
Yes.
So let's revisit, shall we, your record box. And can you get back on the ones and twos for me and put together a set list featuring the songs that really mean something to you, and not just during your time as a DJ, just across the years, the songs that really soundtrack who you are?
Well... It was the 80s. I'll just preface it by saying that.
Go on.
It was the 80s.
You're not going to throw some Mr. at me, are you?
So,
or go
no,
west.
I tell you what, I will put on Love is the Drug by Roxy
tune.
Music.
Yeah. Anything by Roxy Music, but that's
definitely
a good
that
one.
Was
Why
always
that one?
A good one. Well, that was just one of the things, you know, in the Rhythm Method. That was one of the.
It sounds like contraception, by the way, for the church.
I think it was meant to be vaguely rude as a title. But I don't.
Isn't that a form of contraception? If you're,
I think it is.
The
yeah,
method?
I think the Rhythm Method is something to do with, you know, judging the estral cycle as to when when it's safe to go, and when you should very much stay.
Yes.
Should I stay or should I go? Yeah, the Rhythm
Clash.
Method will tell you. Yeah, it will tell you, which would be another track actually.
Great.
that we would have played with the Rhythm Method. There was a lot of James Brown, and there was a fair bit of Northern Soul actually, like sort of Needle in the Haystack, Martha and the Vandellas, that sort of Needle in the Haystack. You know, there
did
was
you
a kind
to do
of
the Northern Soul line dancing.
We would have done that. However, you have to picture us not in a Northern Soul, because this is what we wore, not in a Northern Soul outfit, but very much like budget Simon Le Bon. So with sort of those kind of boots where there was a lot of flappy leather going on around the calf.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the shoe an elf might make in a fairy story. You know, at the bottom level, and then a lot of kind of billowing Prince Charming-ish sort of leather, the boots, and weird grey, and the 80s, so they were grey, and then you'd have your pleated trousers, you know, those trousers where instead of having a flat front, as later became popular in the 90s, you'd have these weird pleats, so the trousers sort of billow out a bit around the groin area. And then
like
you'd
a terrible puss in boots.
Terrible puss in boots. The whole thing actually quite fairy tale influenced, isn't it? And then you'd have a sort of... And then a wing collar shirt seemed to be pretty much... pretty much regulation. So you'd have like a wing collar shirt, maybe wear a red bow tie, could be leather if you so required. And then as a man, you would wear quite heavy makeup in the 80s.
Bit of guy liner,
quite, you know.
I would imagine you rocked the guy liner.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. And I had, my ears were pierced as well. And I don't think I ever wore, maybe there was a bit of blusher, maybe not, I can't remember. But then the hair, you know, in those days you had to have the hair, the bigger the better. So you'd have that kind of, and the more you look, I had a friend who looked extremely like Simon Le Bon, and it was like being around the Beatles in the time of Beatlemania when he went to a nightclub.
So you just travel in his slipstream, yeah?
So, yeah, you travel in his slipstream. Yeah, he was... yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was...
What became of him, Ben? Number. Do you know?
I imagine he went into security or possibly... or maybe started a sort of key-cutting business. I don't know. But anyway, this is to give you the full picture. So playing with that music, which might sound, you know, acceptable. It was a very strange look that went with it. I have to say, my claim to fame at my Cambridge College was that I, as because I was in this mobile disco, bought a mirror ball and attached it in the college bar one night for an event. And I remember going back about 10 years later and the mirror ball was still
Wow, there you go, legacy bar. Right there.
Brilliant, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Not bad for a kid from state school in Nantwich,
right? Not bad, right? Not bad. Not bad. Brought them kicking and screaming into the 1980s.
Or howling and running away from it.
Yeah, yeah, running away.
What would have been the record that you ended your sets on? Or was it important
It
track?
Would have to be a slow, Holding Back the Years, maybe, by Simply Red. That was.
Yeah, we should explain to the listener, if they're young, that the slow dance was very much a thing of the day.
Slow dance was absolutely essential at the end of the night. And you couldn't have two slow dances either.
It was prime time to, get off with somebody.
You had to get off with somebody at that point, yeah. And basically, the nearest person to you would be it was whoever whoever you were standing closest to when
Smooch
that moment came.
Tag.
So people would sort of position themselves towards the end of the night, do you know what I mean? So that they might be within, striking distance of someone they found attractive. But the slow dance was very important. And you would, I think I'm right in saying that you would sort of hold one another in a slow dance. I think you would just dance slowly together. I think you would sort of, be like hands on hip, her hands on your hips, your hands on her hips, sort of swaying gently to, as I say, Holding Back the Years by I'll Keep Holding, that kind of.
Well, my favourite for the slow dance was George Michael's Careless Whisper with the lyric Guilty Feet Have Got No Rhythm, written for the slow dance.
Yes, I mean, he really understood his audience, didn't he?
Didn't he? The Princess Diana haircut, the slow dance lyrics, the video with a yacht.
I used to think that lyric was Guilty Feet, I've Got No Rhythm.
No, have got no rhythm. you put a comma in there that wasn't there.
No.
And then a slight change of words.
I've added an Oxford comma.
There we are. I've enjoyed our musical interlude. Truly.
There you go. Yeah, that was good. I like that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Question number three. You were once inadvertently, I hope, set on fire on set, but John Noakes, Blue Peter legend, kind of unwittingly saved your life because you recalled a demo he'd done on Blue Peter showing you how to extinguish yourself should you ever find yourself alight by rolling yourself up in a carpet. And in your case, you were on set with a bed and you grabbed the duvet and you're here to tell the tale.
Here's the tale.
I just... Yeah, so I just wondered, what other sort of life-saving or life-changing advice have you extracted from the most unlikely of sources?
Well, before we get into that, I just have to fill in a couple of a couple of details. We were doing, one of the things I'm quite proud of is we were doing that joke, you know, when there's an explosion and then when the smoke clears, your face is all covered in soot.
Yeah.
And you sort of wipe your eyes and you can just see like a white bit around your eyes. That was the joke that Alexander Armstrong and I were doing when we filmed that, you know, when that accident happened. And the idea was, is like you kind of have an the way they do it is I have a pyrotechnic, they have a little flash that goes off and then they pump in the smoke. But to get the timing right, they'd pump the smoke first and then do the flash. And what they didn't realise was that the smoke was flammable. So they pumped in the smoke. They did the pyrotechnic flash. The smoke caught light. And basically, a jet of flame went right over the pair of us. But I was wearing extremely flammable clothes. I was wearing some very nylon clothes, which then melted. My trousers melted and stuck to my skin. It was quite uncomfortable.
Bad.
And yes, you're right. And I jumped. We happened to be on a set and I jumped on and I pulled the duvet over me in an homage to John Noakes, who I've had a bit of a thing about my whole life, really.
He's been very lucky for you, hasn't he?
He's been really great for me. I wrote my first show was a one-man show called Gone with Noakes, which was all about my obsession with John Noakes. So, yeah, I mean, that man has no fear. I mean,
Is he like your Obi-Wan?
He's my Obi-Wan. I mean, I don't know. He really did some extraordinary things. For anybody that doesn't know, he was doing these sort of stunts as part of this TV show for kids, Blue Peter, and he would climb the most ridiculously high buildings with no ropes, no safety harness, no nothing. He climbed to the top of Nelson's Column. He also did he did like a ridiculous like 10,000 foot skydive as well. I mean, he was extraordinary. I went to meet him. I tracked him down when I was doing my show. I went to track him down. He'd retired and he was living in Mallorca, and I found out where he was living. And I was waiting on the end of this pier, and this sort of boat came out of the mist. And he said, "Hey Ben, it's me." And it was John Noakes on his boat. He then proceeded to climb to the top of the mast on the boat, right up. I mean, it wasn't the sort of boat that you could climb the mast, is what I mean. And he climbed right up to the top of this. That was, I mean, amazing, absolute hero. What on earth? How I can confection that into some kind of advice? I don't know. I mean, I try and be as brave as John. Is that any good?
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That in itself is just, I mean, like, clearly he's meant a lot to you, and he's kind of, I don't know, it feels like he's had a bit of a hand on your shoulder, doesn't it?
He has. I do admire physical bravery, perhaps because I'm such a physical coward, but I do admire people who do, who can do those extraordinary physical things, you know, ski down mountains off Pisa. I endlessly watch those videos of people snowboarding down off mountain tops and stuff like that. Yeah, there's no way I'm doing anything like that ever, but I do really admire that kind of physical bravery.
So who else has been one of life's great teachers for you?
There's a number. I mean, I love, I particularly love a physicist called G.I. Taylor, who slightly obscure, but actually was one of the, did something really important in physics, which was everything's made of particles, really. And, you know, when you boil it down, everything's made up of a particle. So, you know, we're made of particles, obviously, atoms, and those atoms are made of particles. But light is also made of particles. And one of the people that discovered that was, or showed that, how peculiar light particles were. It was this guy, G.I. Taylor, and he basically set up this experiment at, he was a bit of a, He liked, I was going to say flaneur, you know, someone who really enjoyed the good life, G.I. Taylor. And he set up this experiment and he left it on his he left it on his laboratory bench at Cambridge, and he designed an experiment which was required to run for 6 months, and he went off on holiday for 6 months and came back, and this incredible bit of apparatus that he designed had proved this extraordinary result. And he then got, I mean, I don't know if he won a Nobel Prize, but he certainly would have been considered for one.
Wow.
And I kind of think that is, what I'm trying to say is, what I find take inspiration from in that is that a lot of us get very obsessed with being productive, you know, like making, trying to do stuff all the time. And some of the most productive people, like G.I. Taylor or Albert Einstein, certainly in physics, the most productive ones just took ages over their discoveries and theories. They didn't do any of this stuff quickly. You know, most of the scientific discoveries you've heard of, so we've all heard of Darwin, that was like decades.
That's a life's work. Yeah.
It was like a lifetime of gathering, you know, making observations, you know, coming up with a theory, backing up the theory. You know, you kind of think, oh, Darwin, theory of evolution. That's like, yeah. I mean, he started that when he was about 20, and he ended it when he was an old man when he published that.
Yes, he was. So that's his entire life poured into that, which we all live by now.
I know. Same with Isaac Newton. You know, he was he just disappeared. It was like the plague came to, as he was at Cambridge, I mean, actually probably doing more alchemy than he was actually doing physics. And then he disappears for about 3 years when the plague came to Cambridge. He just went home to Norfolk and apparently did very little.
Took it easy. Stayed out of harm's way.
Took it easy. Then knocks out, you know, the laws of motion.
G.I. went on holiday for 6 months just to see how things
work. Holiday for 6 months. He takes 3 years off, comes back with the laws of motion. I mean, it just shows you, really.
Doesn't it? There's something to be learnt from that. No wonder you've got such a crush on these guys.
I have a lot. Yeah, I suppose because I'm the opposite to that. As I trying to
through life. Yeah,
on the treadmill, trying to be busy and stuff like that. It's not necessarily the answer, is it? So I don't take my own advice, but that would be my advice. It's like, take your time.
Well, listen, thank you for giving me your time today at the end of an impossibly busy one. It's been lovely to talk to you, Ben.
It's been lovely talking to you.
And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
And may I suggest a big glass of wine?
Huge. Yeah. I might run a bath with wine.
Just a bath with wine and a straw. Yeah. Just drink yourself through it. Ben's new book, Diary of a Big Bad Wolf, is available now wherever you get your books. Oh, and don't forget, catch him in the third series of the brilliant Professor T, available now on ITVX. And for more chat with fellow Cambridge luminaries, we've got episodes in our back catalogue with Chef Rick Stein, gardener Monty Don, the comedian Al Murray, and actor Robert Bathurst. Oh, before I go, one more thing. Remember, you can always find us on Instagram for all the latest about the show. We're at @whitewine_questiontime. And also, please hit the follow button on Spotify. It's really, really helpful in terms of us being able to find you. I'll be back on Tuesday with another serving from the cellar. Until then, thank you so much for your company.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.